Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I'm John Paul, and I have Mary Margaret West with me today.
Hey.
And Andy McLean.
What's up? It's good to be here.
Welcome, Andy.
Yeah. Glad to have you, man. If you have been faithful podcast listeners, then you've heard Andy before. He's been with us. How many times have you been with us? Three times?
A few times, yeah.
Three times? Four times?
Yeah.
Nice.
Something
like
that, yeah.
We are glad to have you listening today. I think this is going to be a fun podcast. Wanted to kick this off with a piece of our research from Within Reach by our very own Ben Trueblood, director of Lifeway Students, who is out in sunny California this week, taking a cool vacation. I think it's one of those, his family stayed in the same cabin like year after year after year growing up. And so he's taking his family back to that same cabin.
Mm, that's so fun.
Nostalgia.
Yeah. So that's going to be good. We were laughing. He was like, man, I'm just kind of hoping the things I thought were cool when I was 10 are still cool.
Yeah, they
probably
won't
be. Still cool today. Or at least his kids think they're cool.
Yeah,
so.
Maybe they will be cool to his 10-year-olds.
I don't remember there being so many dead raccoons around this cabin.
So one of the interesting pieces of research that came out of Within Reach says 55% of students who left the church report never hearing other students asking tough questions as they considered what they were taught. So that's what today's about. What does it look like for us as student ministry leaders, student ministry practitioners, to create a culture where students feel comfortable and are encouraged to really think about their faith and ask those tough questions? How do we create that atmosphere? How do we train our leaders to lead in a way that fosters that kind of question-asking culture? How do we get students comfortable with something like that so that all of this would hopefully contribute to one day them not walking away from their faith because they haven't engaged with their faith enough along the way? So, Andy, who's in here with us today, is the author you may know. He has some level of fame as a result of this title that he published called Big Questions, which is a great study. You should go on lifeway.com and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But Andy, I'm gonna toss this over to you. Why is it important for us as student ministry leaders to foster this culture of question asking?
Yeah, no, and it's a great question. One of the I'm looking at the book and some of the research. It's shocking on some level, but also it's not completely surprising. There's another bit of research that came from Ben's book. About half people were talking about, you know, that they grew up in a ministry in which it was safe to talk about these types of questions. You know, and so, you know, there's lots of numbers and figures here. It actually corresponds to another study that I've heard identifying the top two reasons young people are leaving the church.
Yeah.
One of those was basically saying that they felt that their questions couldn't be asked. And then the second part were, no, we grew up in a church in which we could ask questions, but we felt like the questions and the struggles and the doubts that we were expressing, they weren't being taken seriously. The answers that were given, you know, were sort of just trivial and just trying to like placate us for the time being. And pretty much just saying like, look, just have faith. It's just kind of a blind type faith that they were sort of advocating. And because of that, they found more intellectual satisfaction elsewhere. And so it's important, right? It's important to address this topic. Why? Well, primarily because it's part of what it means to grow in one's faith.
Mm.
You know, that's from the history of the church, we see that's, you know, the historic understanding of faith. Faith, yes, it's very much this relational component to faith. We have this personal trust and reliance upon God. And so we talk about faith in a relational manner, but it also includes understanding, and it also includes, you know, obedience, right? And
yeah.
So there's different aspects and facets of faith, and one of those that we sort of need to zero in on in today's, or at least in our culture, right, with students, is this aspect of understanding. Sure, we want to emphasize the trust aspect. We want to emphasize the obedience aspect because faith works itself out in obedient acts. But we also want to emphasize this understanding. like Anselm used to say, like what I shouldn't even quote it, Anselm, because now I'm going blank. But you all know the quote.
Now, I have no idea.
it was basically like faith seeking understanding, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what he was, one of the things that he was known for, faith seeking understanding. It wasn't an intellectual blind faith. It wasn't sort of just a blind leap in the dark. I'm just going to believe because, you know, because of the feelings that I have at this point. It was a faith, but it was a faith that was grounded on evidence. It was a faith that was grounded on sound reasons. It was a faith that wanted to grow in one's understanding of who God is and what he's done, right?
Yeah.
So, in other words, you know, why you believe what you believe. So I think that's... I mean, if I wanted to single out one important reason why this is an important conversation, especially in student ministry, it's going to be because it's a part of what it means to have a genuine, authentic faith before God.
Mm. You know, anytime you read about the lives of some of the church fathers, I think something that's always stood out to me is the time that they spent together in their living rooms just talking out theology, talking out things that they didn't understand or wanted to understand better about the Word and about God. And this really was, for a significant part of history, a common pastime that you'd see in a lot of families, even as you see people talk about the way that Jonathan Edwards, I think it was Jonathan Edwards' wife, what was her name? I can't remember, but the way that she would lead her kids in this constant discussion, there was a constant rhetoric about God all the time in the home. And I think that is something that we have in large part lost.
Yeah.
This just consistent rhythm of talking about the things of God that I think naturally leans to asking those questions. You know, if we're going to talk about these things, then it's going to bring up the things that I'm interested in are the things that I want to know more about. They're the things that I want to continue asking questions about. And so I think a big part of this is a responsibility that spiritual leaders have, whether you're a student ministry spiritual leader or the spiritual leader in your home, that it is a responsibility to foster this kind of conversation and to make this something that is a normal part of your interaction as believers.
Right.
That we talk about the things of God because we love the things of God. And as we foster that, we begin to cherish it, I think. And it just becomes something we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that we wanted to hit was, what does it look like to plan for this kind of depth of conversation, this kind of cadence of conversation? So what would you guys say for a student ministry leader looking, they're looking to plan out, let's say for the next year, I want to begin to plan for this kind of a culture, this question asking culture in my student ministry where my kids are asking tough questions, they're interacting with their faith. How do you begin to do that?
I mean, some of it just comes with anticipating what may come. I mean, like, and whether that is through, you know, curriculum that you're using on a Sunday morning or a sermon series you're preaching on a Wednesday night or whatever that may be, you're trying to think ahead and be proactive. And some of that, too, it's not just being proactive of just the questions and anticipating what those may be, but of being proactive and looking at your leaders and saying, you guys need to be prepared. And you guys, if you're just looking at your, you know, your lesson for the first time on Saturday night, there's no way you can anticipate the types of questions that students may ask on a Sunday morning. And so it's trying to create that that culture where you're thinking ahead, you're trying to get where students are, get in their brains, and they're always going to catch us off guard, I think, to some reason. Like, there's like, in some way, we can never anticipate everything that they could ask. But it just, a lot of that is going to start with you if you are the point person in student ministry. And it's going to flow out of that. Like, your preparedness is going to dictate how well your leaders prepare in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I've experienced that myself when I'm not ready to teach the lesson.
Yeah.
I'm focused on what the next thing is that I have to teach.
Yeah.
And so when a student starts to throw curveballs and you don't know where you're going,
you
don't even want to address the curveball because it's like, okay, I got to get back
on track. I got to keep just, trudging through what I'm trudging through. Yeah.
What do you think when we're talking about even just at the most basic level, Andy, of developing a scope and sequence for deciding what you're going to teach students.
Mm-hmm.
How do you incorporate this kind of thinking as you're deciding where you want to take them?
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking, okay, how would I start this? And maybe it's just kind of like you start with yourself and in a certain respect, because you are, as a minister, as someone who's in ministry, right? You're constantly trying to be prepared more yourself. You're trying to be further equipped to exercise your giftedness, you know, in more and unique ways. And so, like, you got to become a student yourself. And perhaps if you're going to help people address the doubts and questions and that they're dealing with, you got to know how to. Well, let me ask: have you come to some sort of intellectual peace with your own questions and your own doubts? You know,
yeah.
And so, like, I guess, you know, like, have you sufficiently dealt with those? Have you been a student to those questions as you have that maybe you've had in the past? How have you addressed those? Because that's where you need to start. Oftentimes, these tough questions that kind of go and just move from generation to generation. Like, usually they're some of them are unique, but a lot of them are just kind of repackaged and rephrased and, you know, may have a different cultural expression to it, but a lot of them are just kind of the same ones, you know. A lot of them are just still dealing with the problem of pain and suffering.
Yeah.
We deal that, you know, every generation is having to answer that. You know, and a lot of them has to do with just how we integrate or understand how our faith sort of interacts with science and some of the scientific findings and stuff like that. So, you know, that is something too that's just kind of been passed on. But so, you know, what are those questions and those doubts that you've had? Have you sort of just locked them away and sort of just, you know, decided to, you know, believe blindly in some regard? Or have you, you know, faced them and researched them and come to some sort of intellectual peace? So if you have, that's great. That's a great place to start, because you can anticipate the fact that there are some students that are probably, you know, having similar doubts, similar questions go through their mind. And yeah. And that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, and I think that process of really taking yourself through those steps of making sure you know what you think about a thing is so important when you're... So I'll start from a different place. I think it's easy in the busyness of student ministry to just say, if I'm going to plan out a year of curriculum, what do I want to teach my students? What do I want them to learn over the course of the year? It's easy to just say, we need to do some spiritual disciplines. We need to do some studies of some books of the Bible. We need to...
Mm-hmm. February is coming. Let's talk about purity and dating. Like,
yeah.
There are just some things that sort of feel like they become routine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be easy to put together a teaching calendar that really has very little thought behind it.
Yeah.
And so I think, Andy, your encouragement is a strong encouragement to say, okay, let's say you have put this calendar together. You know, it is July 24th today when we're recording this podcast. And so we're coming up pretty quickly on fall kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you've thought about, what am I going to teach my students this fall? Well, maybe you have a teaching calendar down, but you haven't really engaged in a deep way yourself with, what does this mean to me even? You know, why is it important to my faith that I'm teaching this? And as a result mm-hmm. of that, how can I express this in a way that's really going to drive deeply into the hearts of these students?
Yeah.
Now, I think part of that too is an exegesis of your culture. This is just an ongoing exercise that we have to do to understand who our audience is.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, we're going to teach this thing. Have I taught this thing, you know, five times already,
mm-hmm.
you know, and have they received it? Or am I still needing to teach this five more times because of the culture that we're living in? You know, this is a prevalent thing. This is a hard-driving issue that's coming against our students, and so we're hammering it. You know, or whatever the case is, just knowing who they are, what the culture is, how that might dictate their response, and how you can drive those topics into conversation in a way that's going to foster some of that curiosity.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about polling for feedback before a sermon series or a teaching series, just to get the pulse of your students. Have y'all ever done that?
I've never done that in that way. Not for like a, you know, we've kind of set it up, you know, to have question and answer times, you know, exclusively for like, you know, more topical studies, but not for like a sermon series, like what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Have you?
This pastor left and went to a church in Texas, but for the first 4 years I was in Spring Hill, my pastor used to do that on social media really often. And he would just, it was always titled the same thing, Sermon Help. And he would post a question.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine X, what's your response? Or we're talking about this, how do you feel about it? And he would have 300-400 responses to every one of those, and would use those to really craft his message to make sure that it addressed the felt need of the congregation as they responded to it. And I thought, I had not done that either, but I always thought, man, this is brilliant. And it showed some intentionality on his part. He did it so much that it became a regular rhythm of the way the people at the Bridge interacted with their pastor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there were sometimes reading the comments when he would address a topic that was a deeply emotional topic, whether it was about anxiety or, I remember one that stands out, he was talking about mommy guilt. Hey moms, give me your experience with mommy guilt. Mm. And the stories that some of these women posted so freely on this feed, I mean, it was a tearjerker of a feed, but it was incredibly revealing to see what all the struggles were.
Yeah. And I think it's very easy for us to assume that we know like where our students are, what's going on in their hearts and minds. And I think it'd be a good check-in for any of us to like to ask for some feedback and just to be like to truly be a student of the students in our ministry and to learn, like not just assume that we know, but to truly ask and give them opportunity to give you some feedback. And I think sometimes with students, it's really helpful to know who it is. Like there are topics that like it would be really helpful for you to know who is responding. And then there are other moments when like do something anonymous, just let them give you some feedback on a question or whatever. But those things can only help us to get a better clue of what's going on and to be able to know that we're addressing the needs that are in the room and not just assuming that we know. Because I think sometimes in some moments, even for our Lifeway Girls blog, like when I've said, what do y'all want to hear about? Like it's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily match up with the same list of things that like I thought were important that I'm like, we got to shift gears. Like we need to, if this is what people are asking for, we need to make sure that we're hitting those things. And so I think every one of us could learn from something like that, but that's awesome.
So let's say we all want to go this direction. I think it's something any student ministry leader wants is for their kids to really engage in their faith. Mm-hmm. So you guys have all led student ministry small groups before. You know the experience. You get into a Bible study. You think, oh, man, this is going really well. And you kind of tee up this first question. You ask the question, and you look around the room, and it's just crickets.
Yep.
Nobody's answering.
It's the worst.
Nobody's, and that's when, you know, you pull out the, all right, nobody answers. I'm going to start over again. You know, you go back. Yeah. I think sometimes they're scared. Sometimes there's just, a lot of times they're scared. It could be different for different reasons. You know, they don't know if there's really freedom. Maybe you've responded harshly in the past, and they don't know what your reaction's going to be if they give a wrong answer. Maybe they're afraid of what their peers may think of them if they're the first, you know, they don't want to be a tryhard.
Yeah. And maybe what you feel like is a long waiting period is about 3 seconds in reality. Like, because honestly, that's one of my problems is I'm like, all right, so what do y'all think? Okay, so nobody has a response. Like that, like I almost like jump in too fast because I'm worried about that dead space.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, there are people who just need some more time, or you just got to let it sit there for a minute. And I don't know, I didn't mean to, like, divert that direction, but, like, I think sometimes it's on us as leaders, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what would you guys say? How do we really create and communicate that safe place for asking tough questions?
Yeah, the first thing I would say about it is I heard a student pastor not too long ago He was in a group that I'm a part of on Facebook, so we're part of a similar group. He was talking about, he just came back from camp with a group of students, and he was talking about this group of students. You know, it was a small group, maybe like 15 students, but, you know, they've been, he says that, man, these were the types of questions that he was engaging with every night. Like sort of after, you know, all the events had ended, all the activities are done, and you're just with your group, these are the types of questions. And these were, you know, like some really tough questions, exactly what we're talking about. And he is, you know, obviously, he's probably got leaders, you know, staying up with the girls and talking about this, but he's like in the guy's cabin, you know, up till 3 a.m. talking about these tough questions every night of camp. Now, he walked away because he loves this stuff. And, you know, he digs this. He's really into it, and he's a student of apologetics, and so he's all about it. But one of the things that he mentioned was the fact that he's been with this group of students, you know, for the past, like, 7 years.
Yeah.
And so the first thing that I would say is it takes time to sometimes get there, right?
Yeah, that's
so, like,
good.
You need to you want to foster and create an environment in which people can be open and honest about that. But it takes time to foster and cultivate that type of environment. You know, people oftentimes feel shame over even having doubts and asking questions that, you know, they're trying to make sense, you know, between this bit of some information and how this relates to their faith. You know, they feel shame over that. And so, number one, you got to, like, sort of create an environment in which that's not part of, you know, the environment, right? That's not a part of the culture. Like, this isn't, you shouldn't feel shame at all, you know, for asking, you know, questions about, you know, what you're thinking or things that you're struggling with. We don't want you to sort of, like, you know, be, you know, what's the word? I mean, you shouldn't be, you know, super excited, you know, to be having doubts, or, you know, you don't want to end up in a persistent state of doubt. We don't want that for people. We don't want the, you know, their doubts to turn into disbelief or unbelief. No, but we should also not, you know, shame people for having doubts and for wondering how this relates to their faith. And so, so that's the, you know, the first thing is just, as let's not be about the shame culture, but let's also realize that this takes time, and persistence is part of the key there.
Yeah.
And I think there is, and because I'm primarily with girls for the most part when it comes to ministry, like, I think that they're going to process things differently than the guys in your student ministry are. They're, you know, some of them are super verbal, some of them are super emotional, some of them are really quiet and they're processing things in their minds. And so it's like you've got to consider all the types, you know, when you're walking into a room and asking for some feedback or asking for them to, you know, to respond to, especially when it comes to difficult things, because the out loud processors have no problem asking all their questions and saying all the things. But it's like, too, you've got to make sure that it's a safe space for the quiet ones.
Yeah.
And a safe space for the ones that aren't necessarily the first ones to speak up and that always are, like, they're never going to jump unless there's, like, a true opportunity. And I'm one of the talkative people that, like, because I verbally process things, that, like, I've had to learn to, like, hold back and not just ask all my questions right up front, because they're all right in the front of my mind immediately. And, like, I can go to them. And when there's silence, I'm like, all right, I got this. You know, but there are people who really need a minute. And so sometimes that's like giving them a slip of paper and letting them write it down, or, you know, giving them any sort of, like, prompt ahead of time that you can, even if, whether you're texting with a group or whatever, and just to say, hey, tomorrow we're going to be talking about this, so come with some questions. Like, any lead in that you can give to create an environment where they feel like they can just send that back to you, or that they can have some time and some room to think about some of those things. And that's not always going to be the case, but just continuing to say there are no dumb questions, and that then falls on you as the leader to not respond in a dumb way when somebody asks what feels like when you say there are no dumb questions, you've got to act like there are no dumb questions, because they're really aren't. But sometimes we want to go, you should know that, or like, we talked about that last week, or like, you want to, like, it's easy to feel exasperated or something in one of those moments, and you let your response then totally shut down that student. And and that's what we've got to be careful of, is that we're doing what we say we're going to do. And like, if we say there are no dumb questions, then like, you have got to treat every question as if it's just as important as the last one.
That's right. And I think it can be easy, especially if you've put in some significant time with students and you have them in Bible study. I mean, I remember one thing that just jumps out to me, one memory that I was walking around to some of the small groups on Sunday morning. one day, and I stopped to buy my wife's small group. My wife is an excellent Bible teacher. Mm. And so I go in there, and I'm like, okay, I want to hear how this conversation goes. She had, at that time, a really strong group of junior girls. Mm-hmm. And so not only am I confident in my wife's ability to teach, I'm also confident in these junior girls that were, not all of them, but most of them were really leader-type girls. Mm-hmm. And the opening question was, what do we know about the Holy Spirit from the Scripture? And so I hear Crystal ask the question. We have talked about this so many times at this point. Mm-hmm. And these girls were just blank. I mean, just absolutely, I got nothing. I can't even tell you that he's part of the Trinity.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's just no response. Mm-hmm. And it's like in those moments, it's like, okay, I have walked with you guys since you were in sixth grade. You are 11th graders. We have been super intentional. I know because I live with her. You couldn't be with a better Bible study leader right here. Why do you not know?
Yeah.
You know?
Just uh-huh.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those times that you just have to be committed to stay in teacher mode. Okay,
yeah.
If you don't know, we're going to fill in the gap.
Yeah.
You know, if you ask a question that I know I've addressed 45 times, if it's not in there, then
yeah.
We need to find another way to verbalize this. We need to find another context to put this into. Let's think of another illustration because it just means it hasn't stuck yet. You know, it's just part of that process.
And I think what you said about you've got to stay in that mindset of a teacher, because I think when I think back on the best teachers that I've had, they're the ones who didn't let me feel dumb. They always tried to find one more creative way to reinforce the thing. And that's what made those moments and those things stick out so much. And so it's like that, like, stick with it mentality of think like a teacher, think like a coach, like who's going to just try to reinforce and just step back in and go, let's do this one more time, you know, and see if it'll stick. Like those approaches make a huge difference. And I remember a couple years ago, I was sitting in on a sixth grade girls small group. And if you haven't done that lately, that is a trip and a half. Those sixth graders can ask some of the biggest questions you ever imagined. And like this one girl, we were talking about who God is in the lesson. And she just said, she just raised her. She was the girl who'd been chit-chatting the whole time. She raised her hand. She goes, I mean, how big is God really? And as I'm like hesitating to go, well, I mean, like to try to explain the bigness to God, you know, bigness of God to this girl and the rest of these sixth graders. She then follows it up with, I mean, could he fit in this room? I mean, you know, so like I'm going, okay, I'm like, I mean, he's big, but he's small, but like he's personal, but he's like, and my mind is just racing. And so it's like, you've got, like, there's no way, like I didn't have like the big answer that she wanted that, like she just wanted an answer.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I just had to look at her and go, you know what? He's really big, but he also can fit in this room. Like he also makes himself really personal to us and is present with us. And like, and she's just like, okay. She just wanted an answer to her question. And like, but there are those moments too where you sort of have to go, but to really explain the bigness of God, I'm going to need to get back to you next week. And like, we're going to have to come back to this. And it's okay to say, I don't know. And I think that there is such safety in that for students too, to realize that like, we're not complete experts in everything, because then I think it makes what we're doing look unreachable, unattainable. Also, if you have a co-teacher who like they're kind of terrified, you're the lead person and they're going, I can't do this by myself because I don't know everything. They need to see that you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. I think the students, anybody else in the room, and I think you yourself need to be reminded that you don't know everything.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. And that it's okay to say, I don't know, as I would add to that, as long as you make the commitment to the student, this is what I always try to do, but I will
find out. Yep.
And then actually do it.
Yeah, follow up on it.
Because if you don't ever, there is a trust that's lost. Yeah. There's a feeling.
Feels
of,
like you've just blown them off.
Yeah, they didn't think that was important enough. You know, did you ever look that up? Oh, man, I just never got to it. That's puts a bad taste in their mouth and doesn't foster the question asking. If you never get back to them, they're not going to keep asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, what? Just another thing that just may be helpful is that obviously in the context of student ministry, you're not doing it alone. You're doing it alongside of other leaders, right? Your other adult leaders are making the commitment to come alongside of you in the discipleship of young people. And so, you know, being a model for them, you know, as Mary Margaret was just saying, you know, it's extremely important. But a lot of your leaders, they may not know, like, really how to navigate conversations that are kind of more theological in nature or apologetic in nature. And so they don't know that. And so, you know, they too may be coming from a background to where they've been harboring doubts or questions and themselves and that they've never have addressed. And so, man, it could just be a ministry to them, right? So apologetics and just are just, you know, maybe we just need to do away with this term for now, but just the ministry of helping people think through their questions, no matter what you want to call it. That's just part of what we do, you know, as part of what we do in student ministry, as part of what we do as we partner alongside other adult leaders as well. And so you want to be able to equip them. That's one of the great things that we've at least have been able to do from a theological point of view with the Gospel Project. So for the past 6 years, I've been working with the Gospel Project here, one of our ongoing Bible studies. And one of our values is to just be able to introduce certain theological concepts and doctrines along the way. And here's the thing, man. Over the past 6 years, I've heard from various adult leaders. They have said, and I'm not saying this, you know, in a private way, talking about our Bible study, I'm very proud of the fact of what we've been able to accomplish as a team. But they've come to me and they've said, you know, I've taught Bible study for years. I've taught different Bible studies, and we've been a part of different curriculums. But I never knew that Jesus was here in this section of the Old Testament. I never saw him over in this passage or in this passage. You know, here you allude to him there, or here there's an explicit connection. Here there's foreshadowing, and so, you know, they have just never have seen the connections. And that's one thing that have tried to do is help even build our leaders their theological library of understanding, you know, and being able to navigate the scriptures. And the same applies here. So we want people to be able to help them navigate those conversations with students. And so, you know, modeling it is huge, both for students and for leaders as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is one of those times that it's really important to know your leaders well. And so hopefully you're spending some significant time to get to know. Oh, you know, talking about leader training, that's for another podcast, but spending the time to know them and love them and find community with that group of leaders, but also to know how their personalities would lend each one of them to teach a lesson. So, for example, I did ministry with Ben for a long time in Hampton, Virginia. Hampton is a super military concentrated town. And so we had a lot of military personnel that attended our church, and a lot of those moms and dads were very engaged because it's just the dynamic of the thing. You move somewhere every 3 years, those parents tend to be really engaged. You know, they don't just drop their kids off at the front door of the student ministry and say, go in and have fun. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the parents that come in like, what are you doing here? What is your name? What are your credentials? You know?
Yeah.
What's the schedule? What time should I be back? Is it okay if I'm here 10 minutes early? You know, and they're in it. And so as these leaders would get engaged in small groups, I learned really quickly that I had to do a little bit of work for some of them to help soften a Bible study environment.
Mm.
Because it would be, you know, a very rigid kind of experience for a lot of those students.
Yeah.
You know, here are the standards, and why didn't you meet this and this and this? And, you know, I expected this of you. And, you know, and for some of that, it's like, okay, but there's a pastoral care element here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not Bible boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then for others, there was so much care, there wasn't any Bible study going on because it was so much like, oh, you know, how are you? And what happened this weekend? And I want to know everything about your life. And it's like, that's great. Did you talk about the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
Or
at
did
all.
We just look at family pictures the whole time?
Right.
You know? So it's both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
How do you model for them how to get into that study and effectively foster this question asking that's got to happen? Yeah. I heard a story from a friend of mine that had a Bible teacher come in and do a men's group, and this guy was taking them through the book of Romans. And so he asked a question, and two guys answered it wrong. And so he asked a follow-up question. Another two guys answered it wrong. And with every wrong answer, he kept getting a little bit more intense. And so finally, he just barks out the answer. And then he finishes that up with, "What else do you guys not know about the book of Romans?"
Yikes.
And he said, like, sucked the life out of the room. Everybody was just like, "Oh my gosh, I don't know what to do right now." Yeah. You know, on one hand, it was that, like, "Oh, I should know this better." And on the other hand, it just, I mean, conversation was over.
Yeah.
So the modeling is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, just get started with it, you know? I mean, that would be kind of my final encouragement to student ministries. Like just if you want to create that type of environment and culture, then put some things on the calendar in which you can do some Q&As. You can grab some panels of people.
Yeah.
Bring your, you know, along with your, you know, student pastor, maybe someone else on church staff who can help, you know, sort of navigate those conversations. Maybe someone locally, a friend, or just someone, you know, and you know, submit questions beforehand, have students submit them beforehand, make it an event, make it a big thing, make it a fun thing, and to where, you know, to where it's not just, you know, just, you know, dense, really deep stuff all night long, but just, you know, create some fun with it, and or you know, tack it on to one of your nights on one of your retreats and stuff like that. We used to do that quite a bit, and it became a regular expected thing. And
are you suggesting that churches buy the study entitled "Big Questions" and do a big fun lock-in with it?
A big fun lock-in.
Is that what I just?
That is not exactly what you heard.
Big
but I
fun
think,
with
I
big
think,
questions.
Yeah. Lock-ins, I would never advocate for that, first of all.
No.
I am not. So you'll never hear me champion that. But in terms of buying the material, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, for sure.
So you've heard us say a bunch of times on this podcast and through other mediums that we cultivate what we celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of wrap up, Mary Margaret, how do you think we celebrate question asking, the asking of tough questions in our ministries?
I think you, that's a big question right there. Like, yeah, I think you just, it's all in how you approach the questions. And you, even if a student asks something that feels ridiculous or that, like, maybe somebody just answered or that they should know or whatever that may be, it's of still leaning in with them and saying, "I'm so glad you asked that." Mm-hmm. Like, and of just affirming the fact that they'll speak up and that they want to know and that there's something going on. And like, and there may be some of your students who, like, they're asking really hard, really deep questions and you're going, "Whoa." And you just say, "I'm so glad you asked that question. It's a really, a really great question." Like, you just affirm their desire for more and their desire to know and to understand. And by doing those things, you're creating an atmosphere where that feels like it's a great thing to do, and it's participation and it's a being a part of what's going on. But just to acknowledge that, like, you know, it's valid and that they don't understand, you know, that they may not understand something, but that they want to know what the answer is.
Yeah. Mm. That's good. I think sometimes for me, the thing that I like to do the most is when the question is not exactly pointed the direction that I need it to be pointed, mm-hmm. to get us down the road in the lesson I'm trying to teach, right? Helping them piece together the pathway to the truth that we're looking for.
Yeah.
And being able to say, "Okay, you're asking some good questions. From this question, we learn X."
Yeah.
And then connecting the dots from them. If we know this, then prompting the next question.
Mm-hmm.
Then how is this true? Or how does that inform this?
Yeah, keep it moving.
And helping them just kind of see that celebration of you're on the right track.
Yeah.
Even if they're way off in left field, it's normally not too hard to connect the dots for them,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and get them to the right place.
Yeah.
And then I think just even in those groups, I mean, at the end of a session, pointing out a couple of students, "You know what, this was a great Bible study, and I'm so glad, Andy and Mary Margaret, that you asked those two questions. Those are such a big deal in mm-hmm. our discussion, and I think we got a lot of really good stuff done. And next week, we'll be excited to do whatever."
Yeah.
But just the the ongoing acknowledgement of the fact that those questions drove deep understanding and that it was beneficial for everybody that they did it, I think could get us really far down the road.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, this has been another episode of the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.